Blog Talk Radio.
From Sarah Boone's modern ironing board that allows sleeves of women's garments to be ironed more easily, to the countless byproducts of the peanut invented and researched by George Washington Carter, Black people have been at the forefront of innovation and social justice since the beginning of this country's inception. Spiritual social justice dealt a heavy hand when Richard Allen, Absalom Jones, and a group of praying Black parishioners walked out of St. George's Methodist Episcopal Church one day in 1787 to ultimately form the African Methodist Episcopal Church, my church for many generations. The recognition began with Dr. Carter G. Woodson's vision of paying tribute to Negroes all over the country in what started off as Negro History Week in 1926. By 1976, the week became Black History Month, celebrated each February in the United States and each October in the United Kingdom. From Harriet Tubman to Dr. Martin Luther King to young innovators like Dr. Rick Kittles, Black people are truly the fabric of American culture, and Black history is American history. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'm not sure where you're located in the world, or certainly in the United States, but we got a big surprise yesterday. There's a big blizzard coming toward the East Coast, and it's going to, I think, slam into the greater Boston area sometime tomorrow afternoon and much of Saturday. It's going to be a lot of snow. Has altered lots of plans around here. I was speaking at a conference that will not take place this weekend. It's going to be rescheduled, and that's always a lot of hassle when you have to reschedule, and I'm sure there's going to be revenue loss this weekend for a lot of different reasons for people who have activities. But just want you to stay safe and sound and stock up now today, and hopefully we'll be able to ride out the storm and come through with flying colors on Sunday. I am grateful, I am really grateful that the storm did not hit last weekend and did not hit on Friday, February 1st, where we had our 20th Empowerment Recognition Breakfast. It was a wonderful event. About 150 people attended at the University of Massachusetts Boston campus. I do this in collaboration with the McCormick Graduate School and Commonwealth Compact. And so I thank them for being wonderful, wonderful participants and partners in this endeavor. It was just a wonderful event. Again, the singing was melodious. Chef Lee's food was super delicious. Ramu's music was just cool and groovy as people walked in. And very special thanks to our sponsors, to Amtrak, who has sponsored our events for many years, along with Monster Worldwide. We are so thankful for their sponsorship, and Partners Healthcare for their sponsorship, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, their sponsorship. And as I had mentioned earlier, the Commonwealth Compact and UMass, the Graduate School, the McCormick Graduate School. We thank all of our sponsors, along with the Multicultural Symposium Series, for delivering an excellent, wonderful, inspirational, inspiring, terrific event that we didn't have a snowstorm. I'm just so happy. We had table sponsors, including Amtrak as well. We mentioned them earlier. All of our sponsors had tables there. Bethel AAB Church, my church in Boston, had a robust group from my church who attended. Boston Medical Center actually allowed some of our students who were part of the Renaissance Charter School. Boy, did they deliver three powerful messages. I'll tell you about them in just a minute. The Commonwealth Compact, again, our friend in UMass Boston. EMC was there. The Federal Reserve Bank of Boston had a table. We thank you so much. The Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau also had a table. Lesley University always there to support our efforts. MBCR, we thank you so very much. Monster Worldwide, My Multicultural Symposium Series, the National Park Service sponsoring and supporting Cassius Cash, who was our dynamic speaker, absolutely dynamic, and Wheelock College. We say thank you so very much for all of those who supported us. Very special thank you to, again, Chef Lee's Fine Catering. The food was delicious. Austin Elise was one of our terrific supporters and volunteers in the endeavor. Also, Ramu and the crew delivered beautiful, wonderful music that morning. Pat Spence, thank you so much for your volunteer work. Michelle Thomas, thank you very much, my daughter. Denise Willis-Turner, and always Georgiana Melendez, who is the executive director of the Commonwealth Compact, and her staff members who were there to help out, support, and just to make things move very smoothly. Again, our music was delivered by the delightful choir from the Renaissance Charter School. They have actually been to the White House twice, and it's just an amazing group of young people, fifth graders, sixth graders. They've met the president. They sing melodiously well, and we just enjoyed them and gave them three standing ovations. Cassius Cash really talked about the power of all of the national parks and the parks that are here in the Massachusetts area, some of the most important ones in the chain of all of the national parks all over the country. His region goes from Maine down, I believe, to the Washington, D.C. area, and he talked about the role that he plays as superintendent of the National Park Service here in Boston with the Boston sites. It was just a delightful, delightful message. We thank you so much to Michael Munn, who delivered a dramatic reading from Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail. He did a terrific job with that. Also, Georgiana Melendez. Also, Dean Ira Jackson, thank you so much for your comments and your remarks. Again, he's the dean of the McCormick Graduate School. We thank you very much. And we always thank Laura Smith for being such a stellar MC. She did a terrific job. And we thank my pastor, the Reverend Ray Hammond, senior pastor of Bethel AME Church, for delivering our invocation and our benediction. And everybody else who was a part of the breakfast in any kind of way, it's a delight. We've done 20 of these now. We're moving on to the 21st one. And we're just really glad to celebrate it now during Black History Month. I used to have this breakfast in May or June, and I backed it up to coincide with Black History Month, and I'm glad I did, because now we kick off the month really in high fashion and did it in great style. So hats off to everyone involved, all of our sponsors, all of our volunteers who were involved in making this a possible, really possible event. Well, if you're looking to cruise very quickly, you have just a few days left to contact me and get your information in, because our cruise numbers are going to close down this month. And here's a special announcement for you.
The hectic day-to-day activities of busy people like you can be demanding on your time, your energy quotient, and your stress level keeps going up. What's the solution? Our 8-day, 7-night Caribbean cruise. Yes, we're taking our diversity, inclusion, and multicultural message on the road with our first cultural Caribbean cruise set to sail from April 13th through April 20th, 2013. We'll travel to three wonderful ports of call: Puerto Rico, St. Martin, and St. Kitts. Aboard ship, we'll learn about our cultural Caribbean traditions and heritage from Boston-born Dr. Ada McKenzie. We're sailing on Celebrity Cruises' brand new ship, Reflection. Entertainment, relaxation, cultural education, and a great group of informed travelers just like you. A $250 deposit and easy monthly payments books your passage to the tropics. Complete details can be found at www.mffconnect.com or give us a call at 508-947-5755. Affordable, fun, educational, get ready for sun sailing and a sensational cultural Caribbean cruise.
Well, we hope that you'll come with us. Again, we need to hear from you this month. If you plan on going with us, we are closing down our numbers, and we'd love to take you. So do give me a call at 508-947-5755. Thanks so much. Want to spend the rest of our hour really highlighting some of the advancements, the innovations, the research that has everything to do with Black people, everything to do with our culture, our customs, and who we are as a people. I'm hoping later on this month to have someone on from the Smithsonian Museums. There are obviously 19 museums in the Smithsonian system in Washington, D.C. There are dedicated exhibits to African-American history and culture. There's actually going to be an actual building, a permanent building, to house all of the African-American exhibits that will open, the schedule to open up in 2015. But I'm in communications with them and hope to have a representative on the show in the next 2 weeks. So we'll keep you informed just to give you an idea of what you can do if you have a chance to be in Washington, D.C. We encourage you, as I do in the book, to go to the Smithsonian. All of the museums are absolutely free. So you can just walk in and explore, as I say, America's attic, all of the things that are there. And there are incredible African-American exhibits at that museum. So we do encourage you to go. But the whole idea for Black History Month started, it's always with one person and just a handful of people who persist and move forward and realize that, yeah, there are lots of obstacles, but we're going to go on anyway. Let me give you a little bit of history behind this man because it's incredible. We think we have issues today. We have unemployment issues. We have high prices. We have war that's going on all the time. But when you think about what took place 100 years ago and more than 100 years ago, and all of the obstacles that faced those newly freed people who had just been freed like 50 years or less, it's amazing the innovation that took place. It's amazing the people who were dreamers, and we caught on to those dreams, fortunately, and those dreams are living today. So Black History Month is all because of one man, and that's Carter G. Woodson. He was an educator. In some ways self-taught, in other ways he went to some of the finest universities of America. And his organization is a bit small now, but still robust and going forward. It's called the Association for the Study of African-American History, Life and History. Again, the Association for the Study of African-American Life and History. I believe it is housed on the University of Maryland campus. I believe that's where it is. But let me give you the website so you can go there. And if you have actually gotten my e-zine today, you're going to see a beautiful portrait by Charles Bibbs, and that comes from the website of this organization. It's not www, but it's http://ASALH.net. You could go there. You could learn a lot more about Carter G. Woodson. I have pulled some of the information about his biography and put it on my website today on the blog. So you can go to www.telcarole.com, TELLCAROLE.com, and you can read about his fascinating background. He was born in 1875. He passed away in 1950, but the dash between his birth date and his death date really say it all. He didn't begin his formal education until he was 20 years old, so that was around 1895, and his dedication to study enabled him to earn a high school diploma in West Virginia and a bachelor's degree and a master's degree from one of the most prestigious schools in the United States, the University of Chicago, and in just a few years. And then he rounded out his education in 1912, and he became the second African-American to earn a Ph.D. at Harvard University. I believe the first person was W.E.B. Du Bois. So this was an incredible man who probably had lots of hard times when he was first starting off in life, and then said, yeah, education is the path for me. But he didn't just stop there. He didn't just think about himself. He thought about this country and this nation, and he began to recognize that there was a dearth of information about the accomplishments of blacks. By 1915, he was a young academician and young man who was certainly about trying to make a difference in this world. So that is when he started the association. The first name was the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, and it now has evolved to become the Association for the Study of African-American Life and History. He, again, just an incredible person. The theme this year, every year this organization has a theme, even though he's long gone, the theme for Black History Month is the National Black History theme is At the Crossroads of Freedom and Equality, the Emancipation Proclamation and the March on Washington. And 2 weeks ago, I dedicated that show to vision. So I talked about the importance of the Emancipation Proclamation, Abraham Lincoln, and Dr. King and his march. So if you want to know more about that, and I didn't even realize that this was their theme, but clearly we're all on the same page, you can go back and listen to my broadcast 2 weeks ago and learn why that is such a significance with the 150th year that we are celebrating the Emancipation Proclamation, and this year is also going to be the 50th anniversary for the March on Washington. So, again, very critical milestones in our country. Well, again, this visionary realized that things weren't being done right. He began to write himself, and then finally he was able to initiate in 1926 the celebration of what he called, because that was the popular word then, Negro History Week. And it corresponded with the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, both in February. Now, what's interesting and ironic, I'm part of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, founded in 1787, incorporated in 1860, one of the first black denominations in this country, parallel track with all American history, and our Founders' Day is also in February to commemorate the birth date of Richard Allen, which we have placed February 14th when he was born in 1816. I'm sorry, he was born in 1760. So great men born in the month of February, and for those reasons, Black History Month in this case is celebrated during that time. So 1926 began Negro History Week. It was just going to be a week of celebrations, again, corresponding with these great birthdays. And then as things go and as they grow and as people begin to practice them more, then ultimately, and I remember as a child Negro History Week in February, but by 1976, the celebration had expanded to include the entire month of February, and now it is Black History Month all over the United States as people of all ethnic and social backgrounds discuss the black experience. And the black experience, as we should know, is not just here in the United States, because I have a wonderful colleague in England, and I know that Black History Month is celebrated in the month of October in the United Kingdom. There's a lot of connected history. It is not disconnected. It is connected history between the United States and the United Kingdom, especially when it comes to the Freedom Trail and blacks who would escape slavery in the United States, just like Ellen Craft and her husband, and they would escape to Canada. And then ultimately, that was not far enough. They went over to England. And so there is a lineage there between Liverpool, England, which had a very high concentration of African Americans or blacks who ultimately came, or blacks who came to the United Kingdom and ended up in Liverpool. And Garth Dallas is my colleague and friend there who talks about this. So again, we celebrated in February. They celebrated in October. And I'm sure there are versions of it in other parts of the world as well. But the thing that I think is astounding that I want to just concentrate on are the number of innovations that have taken place through the years. It's not just starting in the 20th century. It goes back to the 1700s, and it just goes on and on from there, from poets like Phyllis Wheatley to great writers to educational social justice movements like the African Methodist Episcopal Church, like the Pan-African movement, the Niagara movement of the early 1900s, the formation of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. All of these sort of, they sort of evolved. Things just didn't happen per se. They evolved one right over the, one after the other. So even with the civil rights movement that we know of in the 20th century that we think started in 1955 with the Montgomery bus boycott, in many ways the lineage goes way back to the 1700s. You even look at Benjamin Banneker, who was a mathematician and an astronomer, a surveyor, and a clockmaker. He was born in 1731, died in 1806. And he is responsible for a wooden clock that he made in 1753. He assisted in the survey of the original boundaries of the District of Columbia, that's Washington, D.C., in 1791. And he authored an almanac between 1792 and 1797. So you see, in this case, free blacks who fully participated in the United States, even though the deck was stacked against them. When you think about the things that took place with Harriet Tubman, case in point, and the 300-plus slaves she freed, and she had a $40,000 bounty on her head, and she suffered from headaches because of a beating that she had taken earlier, and she never lost a slave, didn't have any money of her own. She had a bounty on her head. She definitely carried a shotgun so that there were no slaves that were returned. They either were going to go to their freedom or they were going to die a slave. We talked about this. My pastor talked about this with his sermon on Sunday. So bold and courageous people who had great obstacles and odds against them, yet they moved forward anyway. They were visionary people, and that's why I like to talk about vision and how important it is. Well, we move on, and we talk about, I mentioned earlier, Sarah Boone, who was born her lifespan lasted between 1878 and 1900, didn't live very long, but she discovered and created an ironing board that allowed sleeves of a woman's garment to be ironed more easily during that time. So often these innovations were made out of necessity. There was a great need. There were so many things that had to be taken care of in the home, and these individuals saw their way to actually get them done. Well, it's not only in the home where these things were taking place. Even when you look at health care, you have an innovator, Otis Boykin, who was born in 1920 and died in 1982. He was an inventor and an engineer and responsible for the artificial heart pacemaker control unit. Just incredible what was done during this time. One of the greatest persons, and again, I would encourage you to look this up on Google. You can find out a lot of information because he was a teacher for many years at Tuskegee Institute, now known as Tuskegee University, down in Tuskegee, Alabama. He was born in 1865, died in 1943. We're talking about Carter G. Woodson. And he discovered hundreds of uses for previously useless vegetables and fruits, and primarily focused a lot of his innovation on the peanut. So a lot of some of the products that we have today that are peanut-based, they have their roots in what Carter G. Woodson had done. Fascinating person. I've heard him speak. He had a very high-pitched voice. And my mother, I believe, when God rest her soul, she remembers meeting him at some point early in her childhood because she was alive, obviously, from 1917 on, and she remembers him vividly. just a remarkable human being, and I would say this would be a great read for you to find out all the things that Carter G. Woodson was responsible for. You have medical researchers like Charles Drew, born in 1904, died unfortunately in 1950 when he was working on heart products and dealing with heart issues. And here he could not even be treated in the hospital because he was black, and because of complications he passed on, where he was a great innovator in terms of heart research in the medical field. You have Skip Ellis. Skip Ellis was born in 1943. He is still alive. He's a computer scientist. He was the first African-American with a Ph.D. in computer science. And he dealt with software. He was a software inventor, including Office Talk at Xerox. So our innovation may have started in the 1700s, but it definitely continues on to this day. Some of the modern-day innovators include someone like Bessie Blount, Bessie Griffin Blount. She was born in 1914. She just passed away a couple of years ago in 2009. She was a physical therapist inventor, and she created an amputee self-feeding device. Just absolutely amazing, absolutely amazing. And then you have Eric Jarvis. He was born, I'm not quite sure what year he was born. He's still alive, neurobiologist at Duke University, neuroscience, and he deals with bird song studies. So I'm looking right now at like 9 pages of innovation, and I'm sure the list could just go on even more so. And then I mentioned at the top of the show Dr. Rick Kibbles. He is a geneticist, and he was born in 1967, so he's still relatively young. And he's been working in tracing the ancestry of African Americans via DNA testing. Henry Skip Gates over at Harvard has had a number of series on PBS where he's teamed up and collaborated and done his own DNA testing, and now blacks are able to do that to test their roots, their African roots, and definitely their European roots. And we owe it to the likes of Dr. Kittles and others who have just pioneered in this area. Well, you go back in time and you also see people like Lewis Latimer, born in 1848, died in 1928. He was an inventor, a draftsman, expert witness. He worked as a draftsman for both Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison. And he became a member of Edison's pioneers and served as an expert witness in many light bulb litigation lawsuits. So when you look at the telephone and the electric light, then you are also looking at the support that was received from Lewis Latimer, another very great black man. We have Raphael Lee, born in 1949. There's just too much for me to read about him. Surgeon, biomedical engineer. He is a professor. He's a MacArthur Fellow. He is the founder and chairman of a biomolecular technologies company. He discovered the use of surfactant copolymers and chaperones to augmented androgenous injury repair mechanisms of living cells. A really heavy dude. So the list goes on when you're talking about black history and the innovations that have taken place through the ages, through the decades. And I've just given you a short list of this. You can, again, go to many different sources online, pull off these lists, and you can see household products that were actually created and modified and used in the household and elsewhere because of black people. So black history is definitely American history. We will talk more about this throughout the month, but we wanted to get the innovators out first. Bundle up those in the East Coast. We hope that you won't get too much snow. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back next week.